The following is an audio recording of a paper titled Buddhism in the American Media and Imagination, The Tranquil Meditator, The Potential and Limits of American Buddhism, recorded in Chicago on November 16, 2012, for the meaning of the Dharma Academy of North America, copyright 2012, Scott Mitchell.
Thank you for coming this afternoon. I want to start today with this image. It's an image of a rather overtly sexualized woman sitting in a familiar meditation pose. We see many images like these in the media and advertising and whatnot. What we know about this image, though, is it's actually a stock image, meaning that it's a very cheap photograph that somebody can buy and put in whatever kind of ad they want. For example, here she's selling a travel newsletter. This is from the original photo series. This one's interesting. She's selling a Chan meditation center in Taipei. And similar images, she's not alone. Other women meditators are selling MasterCard or bottled water and so on. So there's something to these images. and just to be clear, it's not just the women who are overtly sexualized. Very often men are as well. So my question today is, what, if anything, do these images have to do with Buddhism? And if they do have a connection to Buddhism, what are the consequences of such images to the way that Buddhism is understood and practiced in the American context? Critical analysis of media images can be difficult. How do we study these images in any sort of meaningful way? And in this piece, I use Jane Iwamura's recently published book, Virtual Orientalism. Iwamura traces the genealogy of what she calls a hyperreal or virtual icon that recurs throughout American media and pop culture, an icon she names the Oriental Monk. As an icon, the monk stands in for various aspects of American culture and its relationship to Asian cultures and religions over time. So in her work, she starts off looking at representations of Asians in American media going back more than a century, and she notes this begins with images, for example, of the sinister Fu Manchu that she says represents American anxiety about a rising Asian threat, so to speak. It would be interesting to see more contemporary images of particularly Chinese persons, given the political rise of China nowadays. But over time, in addition to this sort of fear of the Asian other, American media also represents Asians as having a sort of otherworldly kind of mysticism, or they represent a sort of savior figure, and here who represents a sort of mystical, esoteric Asian wisdom. So, for example, Mr. Miyagi from The Karate Kid, and you can think of plenty of other examples of fictional characters. But Dani Wambora is also very clear that it's not just fictional characters, but it can also be real persons, and she notes folks like D.T. Suzuki, the Dalai Lama, or, of course, Deepak Chopra. So, in sum, the Oriental Monk icon is a sort of pop cultural shorthand, alerting the viewer to a particular kind of Asian wisdom. In some sense, we know these figures through their mediated hyper-real representations of them, and they are often more real to us than the actual persons behind them. So, taking a cue from Iwamura, I would like to propose a new icon that we might call the Tranquil Meditator. The icon of the Tranquil Meditator overlaps in several significant ways with the Oriental Monk. Both point toward a vague and ill-defined Asian spirituality or mysticism that is, at the end of the day, supposed to make us feel good. The Tranquil Meditator is somewhat more specific in what she represents. She's almost always a solitary figure, sitting alone or apart from the world, calm and relaxed, and meditating for specific secular or mundane benefits. So before going on, I'd like to point out that oftentimes this image is a woman, and very often she is overtly sexualized. Her gender and sexuality, I think, are important issues that I wish I had time for today, but I'm not going to focus on that for now. What I would like to do is try to see if there's a connection between these images and Buddhism, because these images show up quite a lot in lots of different kinds of media, not just advertising. We also see them in movies. In movies, oftentimes, though, they're depicted as men. Here is Jeff Bridges meditating in his virtual video game world in Tron Legacy, which was a fabulous movie. the meditation has no narrative point in these films. In this particular scene, Jeff is just sitting there for no particular reason other than to calm his mind, presumably for the action to come. There's a similar scene in The Incredible Hulk there with Edward Norton. So presumably they're meditating not for any religious purposes, but just mostly to, you know, get ready to start beating people up. As we've seen, oftentimes the meditator shows up in advertising. Here is a commercial, a television commercial for I think it was an insurance company. The woman is doing a guided meditation, and eventually the tape that she's listening to will say, you have achieved Zen. Now, during the course of the commercial, though, she's constantly interrupted by her family, and the tagline of the commercial is that relaxation can be hard to come by. So what we learn is that the meditation is not for any sort of spiritual or religious purposes, but it's clearly just to make her relaxed. And it's worth noting that she's trying to get relaxed without being interrupted by her family, which I'll come back to. So what does any of this have to do with Buddhism, of course, apart from some vague references to Zen? And I believe that the connection is actually often made in Buddhist media, and here we can talk with Anne more about her work. So, for example, here's what I think is an example of the tranquil meditator on the cover of Tricycle Magazine. I want to be clear here that I'm not talking about Buddhism in general. I'm talking about a very particular Buddhist discourse that that emphasizes this idea of the tranquil meditator and what she might represent. I read this image as a tranquil meditator in part because she's sitting alone. The tagline there says that your life is your practice, and inside are some tips on how to do meditation practices in your everyday world, and the everydayness of them is a pointer to their practical this-worldly uses. Here's a cover of Shambhala San. The copy up there that's too small to read says, millions of us do it and feel it benefits our mind, health, and quality of life. Now leading scientists want to know, does meditation really work? Again, this is this worldly benefits is what we're talking about. Millions of us do not feel like meditation is fundamentally undoing our negative karma. Millions of us do not feel like meditation is transmuting our evil natures into good or helping us overcome greed, hatred, or ignorance. Meditation is trying to make us feel better about our lives, and science is going to prove that. So, in this way, meditation, or at least this particular rhetoric of meditation that makes you healthier and happier, is becoming more and more like yoga, something that we can do quite apart from any sort of particular spiritual practice. And, of course, the connection between Buddhism and yoga is often made in Buddhist media as well. So, the tranquil meditator represents a particular kind of this-worldly nirvana. She represents a practical way for individuals to attain a relaxed and healthful state of mind as a way to alleviate the stresses caused by the modern world. She is not concerned with any metaphysical or existential issues that might be brought up by doing meditation. She just wants to be happy. In this way, meditation becomes, as Iwamura would say, safe for cultural consumption. Nothing more harmless than a trip to the spa or the yoga studio. Now, you might be wondering here, what's my problem with meditation? What's so wrong with people trying to be happy? nothing. I'm quite convinced that if more people were meditating, I'm sure this would be a much better world. And I also want to point out again that this paper is about a particular rhetoric of meditation that suggests that meditation can sort of solve all of our problems. And I believe that there might be consequences to this rhetoric to how Buddhism is understood as a somewhat newer religion in the United States, and the consequences of these representations on real-world Buddhists. So one example would be the work of Jeremy Carrot and Richard King in their book Selling Spirituality. Carrot and King argue that spirituality has been appropriated by a business culture to serve the interests of corporate capitalism and implicate New Age and self-help movements as misappropriating Asian religious practices, such as meditation and yoga. And Mahayana Buddhism, they argue, rejects a conventional search for individual desire fulfillment and daily comforts, and that Asian spirituality in general can be read as a critique of consumerism and a spirituality of the self. In his somewhat more provocatively titled book, Dispirited, How Contemporary Spirituality Makes Us Stupid, Selfish, and Unhappy. David Webster makes a similar critique, noting the commodification of meditation. He also references the critiques that Slavoj Žižek has made against Western Buddhism as commodity, and Webster writes, quote, "We become self-obsessed narcissistic solipsists if we fall for either of the twin discourses of the self. One is that of self-development, the idea that each of us is our own little project, and the other is that of people as brands. It is worth noting how spirituality is another accessory. Put a Buddha on your mantelpiece to indicate to visitors that you may be dull and selfish, but you have a little countercultural influence." Carrot and King and Webster suggest that by turning meditation into a tool for this worldly benefit allows meditation to become yet another commodity to be bought and sold in the capitalist marketplace. Whereas meditation and, by extension, Buddhism might have been able to offer a counter-argument against the failings of capitalism, by becoming itself a commodity, it is effectively neutered. My inner social progressive really wants to agree with this point. However, I am mindful of two things. First, this view that Buddhism should necessarily critique capitalism is, I think, naive. Historically, Buddhists have had a wide and diverse set of responses to wealth and material property, and I think Natalie's work points toward that. And to assume that Buddhists should naturally gravitate toward the left, let alone the far left, ignores this complex history. Secondly, while I certainly agree that free market capitalism might be at the root of all of our problems, simply wishing it away seems equally naive. To quote media and social critic Edward Schiappa, quote, "What we need are critical interventions that not only identify the pernicious effects of capitalism, but point to reasonable alternatives." So perhaps we need a theory of everything. I'm running out of time. pardon me. Leaving aside this critique for a moment, I want to return to the Buddhist connection here, and I want to talk about how Buddhism is understood and practiced if we just look at it through these kinds of media representations. So, for example, if we look again at this alternate copy of Shambhala Sun, here's an article about a list of qualities that I may want to be, peaceful and insightful and so on, and at the very bottom the fine print says explicitly that there are Buddhist meditation practices to help you become peaceful and mindful and so on. What this rhetoric leaves out is, I believe, more important than what it leaves in. This rhetoric is me-focused, and as such it completely ignores both the ethical and the social. It has no concerns for the social good, and where there is a concern for the social good, this concern is not at all a reasonable alternative to our social problems. For example, in a short piece on the Huffington Post website earlier this year, meditation instructor Robert Piper wrote, quote, "Mindfulness meditation needs to be in every school in America." Mm-hmm. Quote, "Because we have a stress epidemic occurring in our schools all across America that is leading to violence, kids dropping out of schools, and even worse, children committing suicide," end quote. In other words, mindfulness meditation is going to save lives. Maybe it will. But this hardly seems like a reasonable alternative to whatever social programs we currently have in place to help American school children. How exactly are we going to convince the average eighth grader to meditate? Seriously. And given our current economic problems, how exactly are we going to fund this nationwide project? Are we planning on using the money we're saving by laying off science teachers to hire meditation instructors? And how is all this going to play out on Fox News? To be fair, meditation might actually help in the lives of American school children, but the style of meditation we're talking about is that of the tranquil meditator. It is the style of meditation focused on making people happy in the short run without a lot of concern with the underlying web of social and existential problems that are at the root of suffering. So this is the problem with the tranquil meditator. She sits alone. She is content to meditate in her home, apart from the family, and without reference to the society as a whole. Her awakening is for her alone. Now, I want to be clear here that I'm not suggesting that Buddhists themselves are not concerned with social justice issues. I am, of course, very well aware of the widespread engaged Buddhist movement and the positive work that this movement does. The icon of the tranquil meditator is just that, an icon. She is not a literal person or a direct reflection of real persons, let alone the entirety of American Buddhism. She represents one aspect of our culture as Buddhists or Americans or both, and that aspect is a generalized desire to be happy. Happy not in any sort of complicated spiritual or existential sense, just happy. Content to live one's life without worrying about the kids or money or exercise. And I get it. I want the same thing. But I cannot rest with just this kind of happiness. I recognize that there is more to Buddhism than either mundane happiness or some magic bullet practice, a single panacea for all of life's problems. I recognize that the solution to our social problems cannot come from simply asking middle schoolers to be mindful. Buddhism is a vast, complex, diverse set of practices, rituals, beliefs, and communities, which in the U.S. is represented by dozens of different Buddhist traditions, as well as ethnicities and socio-political groups, and our collective social problems will only be overcome by a variety of solutions pushed by our collective will. So I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.